When is Illinois going to run out of money?
There's a court case that might literally get us to that breaking point. And it deals with the managed care organizations who are seeking to be brought to the front of the line. If a court rules against us, we will run out of money. And not only that, we're going to have more court-ordered mandated payments than we will have money to cover. So it will be the first time ever that we'll be in a situation like that, where I will then have to, by default, I'll be in violation of court orders because there won't be enough money to cover all of the court-mandated payments. And so we'll have to go to the courts and ask them, okay, out of all of these court-mandated payments, which ones am I allowed to violate? Because there's just not enough money to go around.
So that case is before Judge Lefkow in federal court. It deals with Medicaid providers. There are other lawsuits, the Pay Now Illinois Coalition with human service providers. How do you decide which court order to violate when you have to make that decision?
Well, we haven't gotten to that point yet, right? So the tragedy is that I would ever be in a position where I'd have to decide that. So this is, you know, a situation that no controller's ever had to be in. So we'll have to cross that bridge when we get to it, as we say, and go to the courts and seek their guidance on how to go about prioritizing court-ordered, you know, mandated payments. It's just, like I said, a situation that nobody's ever been in. So there's no precedent for this. And we're going to ask the courts for their help and their guidance.
S&P Global Ratings lowered Illinois' credit rating. Other bond rating agencies have put us on notice. For the average person out there, what does this mean? Why should they care about this?
So the average person, you know, might have a hard time relating to all the different classifications of bond ratings, but the average person understands that when they have terrible credit, they can't access the help that they might need in an emergency, right? So if somebody absolutely needed a car, it's, you know, an emergency for their family as a purchase, but their credit is horrible, they're not going to get a loan, or if they do, it's going to be at predatory lending rates, right? So this is where the state is at right now. If we needed to refinance our debt to get better interest rates for the late payment interest penalties that we're paying already, it's going to cost us a lot more to be able to do these things just because of the state's malfeasance. I mean, we have become, this state of Illinois, especially under these last 2.5 years, has almost tripled its bill backlog, right? When Governor Rauner took office, we were a little bit under $5 billion, but had been paying down the state's debt for 4 consecutive years. Since he's taken office, that debt has gone from little under five to now, as of today, $14.5 billion. I mean, the math tells the story, right? In 2.5 years, more damage has been done to this state's finances than ever in the history of our state, or any state for that matter. It's unprecedented, but more importantly, it's unconscionable, and real people are being hurt. Those $14.5 billion that I talk about and the $800 million that taxpayers will be on the hook for late payment interest penalties, which are dollars that will never be invested in a single life or a single job creation, and nothing in this state. We're burning that money. It's not just like a number on a spreadsheet. You know, these numbers tell a story about millions now of people. It used to be thousands. Now it's over 1 million people who have had dramatic reductions in their services as a result of the state's, impotency. So it's a terrible situation.
You talked about the human cost to the budget impasse, and there is no constitutional protection for payments for human services, for example, but there is a constitutional protection for bond payments. Is that a realistic danger? Are the bond rating agencies realistically assessing the danger of Illinois defaulting? Could Illinois really default on its bond payments?
So I would say that our office is going to do everything within our power. Again, we're not superhuman, although I feel like we're operating in that capacity right now to try to protect that, because there's only one reason that we're still even able to get any type of help financially. And that's because Illinois has not defaulted on its bond payments. So the day we default on our bond payments, you can kiss the state goodbye. So we need to be able to do what we can to try to, as I said, triage this situation. And the controller's office, under a new controller, who is not, you know, beholden to this governor, is really taking a very clear look at the books and seeing how money had been prioritized before in areas that it should not have been, and looking to prioritize really the most vulnerable people amongst us and do what we can within a legal magical framework here, right, to keep the state on the rails and not allow it to derail. But our powers are not, you know, without limit. And the courts right now have taken over a huge part of not just, I would say, the who gets paid and when, but they've taken over the General Assembly's responsibilities, the governor's responsibilities, and my office has as well. I mean, if you think about it, we're basically doing the job of the General Assembly and the governor, and I shouldn't have this much power, and if they don't want me to have this much power, they should actually do their job and pass a budget, right? But the controller of the state of Illinois should not be the one who's determining whether or not the state stays on the rails. We have a job to do, which is to pay the state's bills, but it is a mess in the state of Illinois, and that's the nicest thing I can say about the situation that we're going through right now.
You talked about having more power than you should have under our Constitution because of the political crisis in Illinois, but the controller does have power, even in the best of times, to decide who gets paid first. When you're facing a drug treatment center versus a rape crisis center, for example, no good options, no good answers. How do you make that decision?
So my process is to start by looking at the most vulnerable population. So since the day I took office, we started, we looked at hospice care, for example, had not been funded since the previous July. So we went ahead and tried to get hospice care up to as current as possible, as well as nursing home care, community care, which means people who provide in-home care, home health care workers for seniors and people with disabilities. We've also prioritized children with disabilities and the aging community and the people with disabilities in general. So that from the get-go is who gets the first slice of whatever's left. And then any additional revenues that we have that are discretionary in nature, we try to do in a hardship basis. So we find out that a company will close if they're not able to make their payroll dealing with a certain issue. We can't in every case, but we'll try to meet those case by case and say, okay, we're going to help you get through the next payroll, but we can't give you everything that you're owed because we, of course, would run out of money. So it literally is kind of like George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life, where, there's no money, and his folks all want their money out of the bank.
Well, I got $300 here, George.
Oh, no, Ed, what'll it take until the bank opens? What do you need?
Well, I suppose $20?
$20, now you're talking.
This is what our office is doing right now. We can't give everybody what they're owed, and that would be the fair thing to do, but we just don't have the money to do that. When we have $14.5 billion worth of bills, and today, liquid in our account, we started the day with $18 million. Okay, so $14.5 billion, and we have $18 million liquid. Think about what I have to do to make the best use out of that $18 million. It's like pennies of what's owed. And it's hard for people to wrap their head around that, but that's what my job is, and I'm thankful that I'm here, and, I'm not saying feel sorry for me. This is what I signed up to do, and I'm doing the best job I can. But it is an almost impossible task under the most impossible circumstances. But we're going to get out of this, and I am optimistic that, at some point we'll move forward. But continuing to get credit downgrades, continuing to add to the bill backlog, continuing to add to the late payment interest penalties is the worst possible budget solution we could have. Again, this is the first time in history that we've been in this situation, and in just 2 short years, our bill backlog has tripled under this governor, and it's time to put the politics aside and just get to work.
I imagine you get personal appeals when you're out in the community talking to people. What's the hard luck case you've heard about?
Yeah, so there was a woman in Southern Illinois who, there's so many, by the way, but this is one that I keep very close to my heart, and it reminds me of why I'm doing this. And that was, as a matter of fact, on the day I was sworn in. And it didn't come through the controller's website. It came through what at the time had been like my website on the when I was running for office. And she reached out to me via an email. And it was a very articulate email that talked about how she was on, she had been diagnosed with muscular dystrophy as a small child, now as a grown adult. Her parents were elderly and infirm. Her mother just recently died, as a matter of fact, from cancer. At the time, she was still alive but terminally ill and couldn't care for her anymore. She was wheelchair-bound and connected to a ventilator and, really required the government to just stay alive. And she said, I don't want to die, and I fear that if my insurance company didn't receive a payment by December 15th, they were going to cut off her services on December 22nd, her healthcare services. Now, this is a woman who 100% relies upon her healthcare services to live, literally to breathe. Then at the end of this email, which was very, very emotional for me, What kicked me in the gut was knowing how she sent me the email. She actually did it with a head mouse through the use of a little sticker on her forehead because that's the most mobility she has. And she sent me a picture, and I went to visit her recently when I was in Southern Illinois to meet her. And, you know, her physical condition was even worse than I imagined, but her mental condition is as smart or smarter than anyone I've ever met. The woman is a genius. But imagine being physically trapped in a body that is just completely non-functional for you. So this is what I mean by we're literally working to keep people alive and give them some dignity through their disability or through their elderly years. And that's why I'm so passionate about what I do and why I'm so disgusted by what's happening in the state of Illinois, because I think about those people. They're not just a number on a spreadsheet. And as the state's chief fiscal and accountability officer, you know, I realize that this office plays so much bigger of a role than it ever has before because we are the state's trauma center. And I'm doing the very best I can. But what gets me about, I'll call her Mary just to protect her healthcare privacy. What gets me about Mary is not that we were able to intervene to help Mary, but how many other Marys are even worse off that couldn't communicate with me that I don't know about? And they may have already died. It's very likely that they have. And I'm not going to be able to save every Mary, but I'm going to do my damnedest to try.
Susana Mendoza, thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you.